From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, cheese, cheese, cheese. It's really good for you. This has nothing to do with the fact that we live in Wisconsin and make more cheese than California right now, but of course it does. And listening to music will make your brain better and produce more dopamine. Hey, music is good for you.
Any cheese in our recipe?
No, there's no cheese in our recipe. It's eggplant casserole. If you like, actually, there is cheese in the recipe. I'll tell what I'm looking at. But if you like eggplant, if you love mozzarella cheese, this is something for you. I've been like eggplant. I remember the first time I was a kid, and my mother brought back eggplant, and I tasted it, and I said, it's not a kid's kind of thing at all. And then I went to college, and all of a sudden discovered it was inexpensive and tasted great. It's wonderful.
I wonder what eggplant tastes like. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413, 800-462-7413. Welcoming our first caller now, a listener in Fountain City, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, my daughter introduced me to a drink she thought I would like in the evening. It's called Golden Latte.
Golden Latte.
Yes, and it has no caffeine in it. It's just almond milk, but it also uses turmeric, ginger, cinnamon, a little maple syrup, a pinch of pepper.
Ooh.
But the item I have a question about is MCT oil.
MCT oil?
Yes.
Huh, MCT. What could that stand for?
Well, it's coconut oil / palm oil.
Oh, coconut palm oil.
And my dad, I can always remember him saying, coconut oil or palm oil is one of the worst things for your heart.
Right.
So read the ingredients on packages before you buy anything, especially like cold cereals. And I thought, well, is this going to do me cause damage to my heart? I did have somebody tell me that it helps with the absorption of nutrients.
Oh, you know something? There's always something. People always tell me something good. Let me tell you a little bit. Yeah, it helps with the. First of all, if they really thought this was a good seller, they would put down coconut and palm oil. And instead, they put down an acronym so people, because they knew people might look at it and say, I'm not going to buy this product because it has palm oil in it, right?
Right.
I mean, otherwise, they'd say, hey, we've got palm oil. Like, hey, we're gluten free or we're vegan free or we've got this or we've got that. But when they obfuscate it, and I've been trying to use that word in a sense
very
for
good.
A while. Thank you very much. SAT world, obfuscate. But, you know, if they want to basically hide it, they're going to put it in an acronym and you're going to look it up. So palm oil, well, a lot of it is produced in Malaysia. Years ago, we're talking about many years ago, more than 40 years ago, my wife and I traveled through Malaysia and they were cutting down forests in Malaysia and planting palm trees that produced palm oil. Basically, these are kind of small little coconuts, which they open up. Cheap, inexpensive oil. Worldwide, it's used with a lot of things from frying to baking and other things. And is it good for you? Well, it really is not good for you. It's a type of a saturated fat that's not the best. So it really depends on how much. So how much golden latte a day are you consuming?
Well, I usually have one cup in the evening, but it's a cup and a half of almond milk, and so it ends up being two cups, you know, by the time I...
Oh, yeah. But how much of the stuff? So you're having a cup.
Oh, the MCT oil. No. I only put 2 teaspoons in the drink.
That's not very much at all. 2 teaspoons is not going to do you bad at all. The issue when it comes to things like palm oil is, are you having fried foods all the time? Are you having baked goods that are made with it? You know, we used to put, you know, a bunch of things in baked goods to basically keep them, quote, fresh for a longer period of time. But 2 teaspoons? A couple tablespoons, it's not going to bother you at all. So, do you like the taste of it?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. It's soothing. It's comforting in the evening. Yeah.
I would definitely continue with it at all. The palm oil issue was when you looked at trans fats. Remember, trans fats were things that were in a lot of baked goods to keep them, like Twinkies, to keep them good. Until the apocalypse. And trans fats worked better with palm oil and coconut oil. But 2 teaspoons, a couple tablespoonfuls a day. You don't have to worry about it at all.
Great.
Yeah. So thanks a lot. And thanks for bringing up, I think, a very important point. Reading the label, it makes a big difference because all of a sudden when you read the label, it can, you know, you can find out there are things that are not. And especially, you know, the idea that if there are more than 5 or 6 things in the label, then it means that it may just be industrialized food. But that's it. But reading the label makes a difference. Enjoy your drink.
Great. Thank you.
We appreciate the call. It sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just sounds good. You know, one thing I want to bring up, Michael Pollan, a great writer, he wrote a number of books, excellent books on food, and he talked a lot about industrialized food products. And kind of we're all moving back, not only the back to nature movement, but the back to things that are more pure.
Zorba, now before our next call, you have 5 reasons cheese is actually good for your health.
Actually, so you're implying when you say cheese is actually good for you that people actually think that cheese is bad for you? You know, I mean, come on, let's talk about the French paradox. The French people have low rates of heart disease despite the fact that they have a great affinity for cheese and duck. And my wife Penny and I were recently in Paris. Unfortunately, somebody has to go there.
Poor babies.
I knew you would like that. Somebody has to go there, exactly. So we were in Paris and went to just, you know, down the street, and there was a wonderful cheese store, and there were a couple of people in this store, and there were just like a gazillion different kinds of cheese. And I said, I would like some camembert in my best American accent. I don't speak French. And she looked and she said, immediately went into English. And she said, well, how do you want the camembert? Do you want it ripe? You know, and she went to the different camemberts, or do you want it fresher? Because it wasn't just camembert. There were 4 different kinds of camembert, and how ripe do you want it? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my goodness. And then took it back, and we had cheese every day, but we had small amounts of cheese, not large amounts. But I'm going to tell you 5 reasons from an article that cheese is good for us. So first of all, the French eat 2 to 4 ounces of cheese a day, and they have less heart disease, 18% less heart disease than we do. So obviously, we should follow what the French do. They probably do other things to reduce the risk of heart disease, like walk more than we do, but let's put that off to the side. Number 2. It appears that eating 2 ounces of cheese a day, according to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, will lower your risk of diabetes by 8 to 10%. Wow. We have a lot of – you're looking incredulous when you're looking at me. We have a lot of diabetes.
Is this good science?
And diabetes if we eat more cheese. Number three, a study from the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, once again a Frenchman, that said they are happier when they eat cheese. It makes their life happier. So, you know, if you have a happy life, you're going to live longer. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows happy people live longer than depressed people. Moving on, improves your cholesterol. A 2015 study, randomized controlled study of nutrition review showed that blood cholesterol is actually better. Better LDL, lower bad cholesterol, and increased good cholesterol when you had 1 or 2 ounces of cheese, maybe because it has vitamin K2. Are you ready to go on? Can I give you the 5th?
No, please.
I know you're paying attention to this. Yeah. Sitting on the edge of your sheet. Here it is. Eating almost a cup of ricotta for 12 weeks in Italian men over the age of 60 improved their strength when they actually put them on and lifted weights at a gym studio. So it will actually make you strong. It makes you stronger, makes you healthier, fends off death, is better for diabetes, and cuts the risk of heart disease.
What's the science involved in this?
Well, we're not talking about science.
It sounds like the national cheese people. people.
I think probably this particular research was. You mean they might have a reason to have us eat cheese? That's right. Yeah, the American Dairy Association actually endorsed probably every single one of these studies. You know, gotta tell you, this reminds me. My father, who at one point was actually in the gumball business, and he would go to the candy show in Chicago. And let me tell you, at McCormick Place, if you ever want to go in a place where you are filled with happy people, it's the candy show.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the doctor's conventions where they're all dour. It's the candy show. And he would send me propaganda from the American Sugar Society showing me that sugar was brain food and it would improve your brain. I think this is in the same category.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
My question is actually about my dad. He is 75, about to turn 76. He's a wonderful dad and grandfather. We all just adore him. And he is absolutely one of your biggest fans. He starts every conversation, topic about medicine or health with Zorba says, .. Zorba says.
Yeah, I wish she would listen. Yeah. I wish Penny would listen to every conversation and do that.
Does he like the way I give the phone number? That's my whole purpose.
Hey, that's
here.
It. That's it. You know, you're
he
the
does.
Jack
he
McMahon.
Does.
Okay.
He loves your banter. Loves it. So he never really sought any medical care. Mm-hmm. After he was about 20 years old, he never went to a doctor. He never had any problems. Mm-hmm. And he took vitamins and supplements, you know, way before it was cool and before there was a GNC on every corner. Uh-huh. But he never had a personal physician. Uh-huh. He never had a panel of blood work his entire life. Uh-huh. And he continued to work into his 70s. But in 2014, he was driving to work, and he suddenly had crushing chest pain. So that's when he decided he needed a doctor immediately.
Yeah, right, you think?
So he was having a posterior MI. He had an angio, a stent. He recovered very fast. He has been super compliant with all of his physician orders. He blocked everyone's socks off at cardiac rehab. He does great now, and he goes to his physicals. He just had a great physical. His blood work was pristine. His echo was great. Hardly any heart damage. But he has since retired, and he's enjoying it. But now we're concerned that maybe he's gone a little too far with concern for his health, and instead of enjoying healthy life in his 70s, he's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You know, it's very interesting. My mother-in-law, Jerry, who has since passed away, had a term for that, because back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that was not an uncommon thing for men to all of a sudden withdraw when they had a heart attack from everything, from enjoying things, from going where, from having sex and sensual pleasure. And she would say they became a cardiac cripple. We don't use the word cripple anymore, really, because it's a pejorative term. So we've gotten rid of the word. But that's what she called that. And she basically said it is a crippling thing, especially for guys.
Yeah.
And it appeared to be more of a male issue. So is that it? Is he seemed to be – I mean, it sounds like it's crippling his lifestyle.
A little bit. He respects your opinion so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that you can give him your down-to-earth advice about just like a healthy living routine.
Sure.
That isn't so, constricting, so that he can feel confident that he's doing the right thing.
I believe in everything in moderation, including moderation. moderation. So it means that, you know, when I went out, I was just in Madrid, Spain, listening to Ben Sidran. I don't drink that much. I had like 3 or 4 drinks. Now, I don't do that every night. In fact, I may have a glass of wine or may have a beer, but I don't have 3 or 4 drinks. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go out and have a little more drink. I just get a chance to walk like 2 blocks to my hotel, and I enjoyed it, and I had a cigar when I was outside of the restaurant. I don't have a cigar very often, maybe once a year, twice a year. I used to smoke cigarettes back in the 60s. I would have an occasional cigar. I enjoyed myself, but I didn't do it all the time. I think the important right. thing for your dad is we look at generally what we want to do, but we don't want to be so obsessive compulsive that
exactly.
we ruin the joy that we have, the vivality that we have in life. So we've got to sin a little. We've got to go off that a little. We have to have that chocolate cake. We have to have that extra right. drink. And that's really important. And I think that would be the best advice for your dad is moderation in that. And also the other issue is if you look at the American Heart Association cardboard diet that nobody right. can follow except for the people with obsessive compulsive disorder or people who have no sense of taste and don't like
right.
food, that it was not right. better than the Mediterranean diet that had cheese in it, had nuts, it had animal fat in it, not a lot of it. It's a much nicer way to live, and it produced less heart disease. The Med diet is far better than the old-fashioned American Heart Association diet. So tell your dad yeah. to loosen up a little bit, and I said so. How does that sound?
It sounds great. Also, how about exercise? Do you think how many days a week should he be exercising and how hard should he be going, do you
think? The research now shows doing something is better than doing nothing. And you don't
That's
necessarily
right.
have to get your heart rate up to 80% of its maximal heart rate 20 minutes, 3 days a week. You will be more aerobically fit. But the data shows once you actually get to about 6,000 to 7,000, roughly about 6,000 steps a day with a step counter, that really is the thing that makes the difference. So his exercise can be walking 5 days a week. It doesn't
right.
have to be the gym.
Right.
If he feels better at the gym, if he feels stronger, sure. But just doing something every single day is really what makes it really what makes a difference. So
that sounds great. Thank you so much. He needs a little help celebrating turning 76 next month.
Oh my goodness!
Do you think you could give him a little birthday shout out?
Oh, I love. You know what? You know, Tom, I don't know about Tom, but Tom
yeah.
used to be on stage as a solo singer back in the day.
Where did he get that?
You know,
that came right out of the air.
You know, it was the Tom Clark Show. People would just want him to do it. They would look at it, and I'm going to do happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Dear, what's his name?
Peter.
Oh, you got it. Happy birthday to you. Oh, and many more.
Thanks for the
wonderful.
Call.
And good luck with
Thank
your
you dad. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
She mentioned smoking a cigar. You used to smoke a cigar every now and then.
Every now and then. Yeah. I didn't smoke on a regular
I used
basis.
To, too. I had a little bit. But yeah. about as often.
Yeah.
But I smoked a pipe every day.
Right.
For a
long time.
And then I
right.
decided, wait a minute. A pipe on one hand, close time with Monica on the other hand. I gave up that pipe.
That's right. We know what the motivating force was for that. Even public radio listeners understand that. You don't have to be an MTV watcher to understand.
800-462-7413. Before the breakdown, Zorba, let's check in again with your backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Elizabeth in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. Isn't that a nice name?
Yeah, I like it. Niagara-on-the-Lake. Yeah. I like it.
Sent us the following email. I just heard that someone corrected Zorba's pronunciation of Gouda cheese. Far worse is the way Zorba just pronounced C-R-E-M-E, fresh. It's not cream. It's pronounced creme.
Oh, I said probably crema fresh, and it should have been crema fresh. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. What would my mother say? Or what would Miss Schutte say? You know, my most unfavorite elementary school teacher, who I had not one, not two, but for 3 years, she was always correcting me and saying, Mr. Pastor, you just talk too much. And in fact, you don't even say crema right. You say it wrong. Get used to her voice.
Do you think Zorba should freshen up on his French? Give us your thoughts by posting on our Facebook page or send us an email at.
And I'd love to do this in French, but I can't. So send it to Zorba@WPR.org.
Our tasty recipe coming up along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Come talk with Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, before our next call, our recipe.
Yes.
Eggplant casserole.
I know how much you love eggplant. I know when you go out with Monica, you go, let's go to a restaurant that serves eggplant because it's like my favorite thing in the world, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever tasted eggplant?
No.
Not that you know of.
I probably forgot.
That's right, because eggplant to you is a forgettable dish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So some people, it's a wonderful dish. So, I happen to like eggplant. Aubergine, I'm not going to try to pronounce it. The grammar police are going to come. But I don't even know why I call it eggplant. I mean, it doesn't look like an egg.
It doesn't taste like an egg.
It doesn't taste like an egg. I wonder if any one of our listeners knows why it's called eggplant. Maybe they'll send us an email, zorba@wpr.org, to tell us.
It doesn't come from chickens or anything, right?
No, it doesn't come from chickens.
Okay, all right.
So let's start. So first of all, you're going to spray the pan with some sort of cooking spray. If you've got avocado oil spray for the pan, that's great. But I have different kinds of sprays, Pam sprays for the pan, because you want to make sure that you've got oil.
Spray for pan.
Right. One large eggplant, you're going to unpeel. The eggplant is going to be unpeeled. About 1 1/4-inch eggplant, unpeeled.
A large eggplant.
Okay, 1/4 teaspoon of the three things, kosher salt, black pepper, and fresh garlic powder.
1/4 little tea kosher salt, 1/4 little tea black pepper, 1/4...
Yeah, go ahead, little tea.
1/4 little tea, 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder.
That's right. So the thing about garlic powder is eventually it goes stale. So you want to get a little container and use fresh garlic powder. I always use Penzies because they have the best. 3/4 teaspoon of basil, dried basil.
3/4 little tea, dried basil.
1/2 cup of marinara sauce. So your favorite, you can use over the counter or maybe you make fresh stuff, but 1/2 cup of marinara sauce.
1/2 cup marinara sauce.
1/2 cup of shredded part skim milk mozzarella cheese. And you can use regular mozzarella if you want to, about 4 ounces.
1 cup shredded part skim mozzarella. What does divided 4 ounce mean?
Well, you'll see. It's 4 ounces. And you're going to have to divide it.
Okay.
And a tablespoonful or more of grated Parmesan cheese.
Big T, grated Parmesan cheese.
That's right. Now, here's what you're going to do, Tom. First of all, you're going to go into the kitchen and turn on the oven. Let's see if you can actually do that. And you're going to...
Is there a thing that says on?
That's what it says on. And there's a dial. And then you're going to line a large rim baking sheet with parchment paper. Now, since you probably have never used parchment paper, you probably think you go to the stationery store.
Yep.
And where are the stationery stores today that just have to and put in parchment paper? No, it's... it's called a baking paper called parchment paper because then you don't have to clean up. That's the most important thing. You don't want to, you want to make it easier. Spray it with the cooking spray so you don't have to clean up as much. Okay. Take the eggplant, slice it into 1/4-inch thick slices, arrange the sheets on that baking sheet on the parchment paper. Spray the oil again. Once again, palm oil, avocado oil with that. Season with the kosher salt, black pepper, basil, garlic powder. Roast it for 15 minutes. And once again, you can do that if you actually slice that up. This is actually a recipe you could make, but you will not.
You're not talking with the listeners, though.
I ain't talking with the listeners. Remove the baking sheet from the oven. Turn the eggplant over. Spray the other side. Put it in for another 15 minutes. Roast it until it's nice and brown. Then you once again remove it. Turn the oven temperature up to 425. So basically, these discs of Parmesan are now roasted. So arrange half the eggplant slices in the bottom of a greased 1/4-inch casserole dish. Spread 1/2 the marinara sauce on top. Sprinkle with 1/2 the mozzarella. And then arrange the remaining eggplant slices on top. Spread the remaining mozzarella on top of that. Sprinkle with the remaining mozzarella that you have in Parmesan cheese. And bake it till it's golden bubbly about 15 minutes. And then then cool it for about 10 minutes before serving. So it's an eggplant casserole similar to eggplant parmesan, which is one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. And I know, Tom, you're going to want this recipe. That's right, Ann. If you are like Tom and or are not like Tom and you want this recipe, go to zorbapastor.org and you'll find this recipe and other fine recipes and photos of Tom and I. That's zorbapastor.org or through Facebook.
And if you like Tom, which very few people do.
No, they like you. Because you know what? You do that phone number so well.
Oh, thank that's you. Your, thank
you're
you.
Welcome. You're welcome.
I practice.
Yeah, that's right. You practice. That's right.
800-462-7413.
It goes right to my heart. Right to my heart.
Let's get back to the phones. A listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Hello. I've got a question about Invega shots.
What kind of shots?
Invega.
Invega. Tell me a little bit about it.
From what I've gathered and what I've been told through my psychiatrist and stuff, is that it's a treatment, kind of an all-in-one treatment for schizophrenia.
Right, right. It's one. It's a long-acting, I believe that shot is a long-acting risperidone, which basically is risperidol, which is an antipsychotic medication. And I think that's the name brand of this because that's the long-acting medication that's often used for that. What do you suffer from? What sort of problem do you have?
I have schizoaffective disorder.
And how long have you been aware of it?
I've been aware since about 2016.
Since 2016. When do you think it actually started for you? How long ago?
Probably about 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah. I mean, that usually is when it develops in that. Have you taken the shots?
No, I haven't because I have a fear that when I got started on my meds with this stuff, the doctor gave me Haldol.
Uh-huh.
And
different
another,
drug.
I think he gave me Depakote along with it. But I took one dose of the Haldol, and I had a dystonic reaction the next day.
Uh-huh. Well, Haldol is more dystonic reactions are where you have side effects. And tell people what actually occurred. Did you have trouble with your mouth, or what happened when you had that dystonic reaction?
In a matter of a couple hours, I went from my body just kind of like slightly being stiff and sore and kind of out of place feeling to my jaw was completely contorted to the left side.
Right.
I could not control movement. My mouth was locked open.
Right. That's exactly.
I could hardly talk. Yeah. My kids were frightened.
Oh, yeah. No. It's a frightening thing. Did you then go – did you get Benadryl in the emergency room or what did you
That's
end up
That's exactly what happened. I went to the emergency room. The doctor – I didn't have to tell him so I couldn't get the word out.
Right.
My wife told him and he gave me some Benadryl.
That's right. And reverses it immediately. It's a very, very scary, very uncomfortable thing. So one of the things you can do, first of all, you're right to be worried about it, but it's a different drug. But does it cause dystonia? I don't know what the percentage is, but Haldol is known. So I know Haldol is much more likely. One of the things you can do is take the short-acting version of the drug and see what happens with the short-acting version. In other words, there's an immediate release of the drug and then see whether or not that causes the dystonia. It may or may not.
Okay.
And it's a very individual thing. And the drug – so where you'd be on – when he discussed the injections, how often were the injections going to be? Were they monthly or two-weekly, every fortnight?
They said monthly because of the meds that I'm on now, and that's also another – issue I have with it is I don't know if Invega will be a good switch from Seroquel because if I don't take a Seroquel at night, I can't sleep.
Well, there are other things about why did your psychiatrist want to switch you to Invega? You must be having symptoms or
I was telling them that I don't think the Seroquel is working like it should. The only thing it's doing is making me sleep at night, and I don't like being dependent on anything to make me sleep. I don't like it.
And when you don't take it, though, then you don't – is it just a sleep or does your psychiatrist want to give it to you to feel that you might improve?
He's thinking that I might improve and it would make my day easier because I'm a very busy person. That it would take away having to take my lithium in the morning. It would take away having to take mini press at night for nightmares.
And, Well, here's what I think. First of all, I think you're right to be concerned about the dystonic reaction, but the drug is not it's not Haldol. It's not the same drug. And so the chances are you've got a good chance you're not going to have the dystonic reaction. But taking the immediate release form would give you sort of an idea, and that would that might be a good first step to see whether or not you're talking.
Okay. Okay.
Now, number two, your doctor could put you on something or could keep you on the Seroquel initially on that dose or a lower dose that may help you sleep. But if you get off the Seroquel initially, you're going to have trouble sleeping just because you're withdrawing from the Seroquel. So you'll have 3 to 5 nights, you know, even when you taper off the Seroquel, you're going to have a little bit of trouble sleeping, and eventually a normal sleep pattern will probably come into being. And that's just, if anyone wanted a Seroquel, even if they didn't have insomnia, they would have trouble because you, basically, as the drug goes out of your system, you have fragmented sleep. So you're going to have some sleepless nights. Realize you may wake up. One of my good friend, when he wakes up in the middle of the night, he always puts earphones in his ears and listens to Confucius because it's so boring that it puts him to sleep. He doesn't listen to murder mysteries. He listens to Confucius and other boring monotonic lectures, because when he puts it in his ears, he goes, yeah, within 5 or 10 minutes, I remember what it was like in school, and it puts me to sleep. So he may want to do that. But I'm a great believer in changing medications for schizoaffective disorder, people with manic depression, if they feel like they're not getting the optimal, to do a little bit of experimentation. So I'm on board with what your psychiatrist is thinking of, but I would do a test dose with an immediate release and then see if you feel better. You know, do an experiment. You can always go back to what you're on.
Right.
That's okay. That's what I would do.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Yep. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate that call at 800-462-7413.
You know, when you have schizoaffective disorder, manic depression, or just depression, and you're on medications, and the medications are working, and sometimes you wonder, hey, am I going to feel better with a change of medication? The real issue is it may be rocky when you make that change. And the change may be good for you, or the change may not be good for you, but you can usually almost always go back to what you were on before. And sometimes doing a little experimentation can make a big difference in your life.
Before the break now, Zorba, let's do the segment where you get yelled at for something you said on the show. Here's another edition.
Wait a minute, we had a grammar police before, didn't we?
Here's another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. The following email came to us from Nancy in Richland, Wisconsin. Zorba, when a woman called about microwaving a sponge for 8 minutes to disinfect it, I was surprised that you did not mention how over-microwaving water can superheat water, causing it to explode when the surface is disturbed. This has happened to multiple people, including a friend of mine, causing serious burns. You might want to mention it when talking about microwaving in the future.
Okay.
Heating water is fine, but superheating water is dangerous.
That's right. No, it's exactly it, because all of a sudden there's steam in there, and you reach the heat and you're microwaving your sponge. I can just picture. Water doesn't go above 212. Well, that's really hot. That can burn you, obviously. But when you have steam, it starts at 212 and on it goes higher. So I stand corrected.
Did something Zorba say, get him in hot water?
That's funny.
Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Another topic to talk about that's coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next listener, another advantage of listening to good music.
Right. Listening to good music has big advantages, you know, to the stuff you like. You like listening to music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you used to play music. You used to play the French horn.
Yes.
I mean, and it gave you pleasure, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, what's going on? And if we look basically in our brain, the neurotransmitters in our brain, what I call the DOS system, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin. These three neurotransmitters have a lot to do with how we like things. So this is a good article published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And I mention that because ProcSci, as it's called, is a prestigious journal. You don't get stuff mm-hmm. into that journal. It's not just peer-reviewed. Mm-hmm. It's really, really, really peer-reviewed, mm-hmm. you know, like the New England Journal of Medicine. And what happens is, you know, when we're in life, we engage in lots of complex activities that we like, give us pleasure. Listening to music, going and downloading it, playing music really gives us a lot of pleasure. And the question is, what was going on here? And so they wanted to see what effect dopamine had on this, in other words, the neurotransmitters. So they took roughly between 25 and 30, you know, people who would do something. 1 week separated three different areas that they were working on. Number one, they were given music, and they were given levodopa, which is a drug that actually enhances dopamine in your brain. In the next group, the next week, the same people were given risperidone, which decreases dopamine within the brain. It's a drug that's actually used for schizophrenia and for people with mood disorders. Mm-hmm. And the third week, they were given a placebo. And what they found was that when people were given the dopamine antagonist, you're not getting dopamine, they didn't like the music as much. And when people were given the dopamine enhancer, they liked the music more. And that was compared to the placebo. So in other words, what they discovered was the more dopamine you have in your brain, the more pleasure you get. And music increased the dopamine within the brain.
Interesting.
And when you block that, you didn't like the music. Yeah. You know, it didn't sound as good.
I don't listen to much music anymore. That's where that's been.
Well, I think it may be bad. It might be good. Listening to music is something that gives us pleasure. And we know now that people who engage in activities with our ears actually can make a big difference. Do you think part of it is because you wear hearing aids?
I hadn't thought about that. I don't think so, because I hear fine with hearing aids.
Yeah, so it might be, you know, just like we read to make our brain better, I think listening to music mm-hmm. gives us more pleasure. And there's very good evidence that we learn a lot through our ears. We do not just learn through our eyes. So my recommendation to people is listen to more music. Listen to more music that gives you pleasure. And we now know that increases dopamine in your brain, which is great.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Sparta, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I've been having a problem where blood tests are coming back that I have higher than acceptable figures for copper level in my system.
Mm-hmm.
I've checked my water. I mm-hmm. filter all my water. And it's been over a year, and the numbers are still increasing.
Uh-huh. Who are you going to where they're measuring copper?
My internal medicine doctor mm-hmm. once a year does a whole large panel.
Uh-huh.
And I have other health issues. So this was just something he threw in the panel, mm-hmm. and the number came back high.
Uh-huh. What other health issues do you have?
I'm diabetic.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I have, I'm kissing the underside of 70.
Uh-huh.
And I have quite a bit of arthritis in my system.
Okay, so you've got arthritis and diabetes and age, old age.
And age. Yep, that's what they call me now. Like the senior benefits and something, but not the help with it.
No. You may get the senior benefit at the restaurant, but you don't get it at the doctor's office. That's exactly
correct.
Right.
Correct.
Not at all. So they measured copper because it's unusual to measure it. And the numbers are still rising, they said?
Well, the numbers are still rising. Mm-hmm. Now, they're twice as high as what the highest level range of acceptable in the medical
uh-huh.
field. But when they do, I did a 24-hour urine sample.
Okay.
That came back normal.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not shedding copper, but I don't know how I'm getting it. And uh-huh. my doctor just scratches his head.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where to turn next.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't know much about copper. I want to say that. So I have never ordered a copper level. So I'm not sure why your doctor ordered a copper level. And I don't know whether what that has to do with human health. In other words, we know there can be copper poisoning in great amounts, but I don't have any idea. I don't have a computer in front of me, Wikipedia or up to date to look at that. But I do have some suggestion. If you're worried about copper, you need a second opinion. And I'm not sure exactly. Your doctor ordered it for some reason they're looking at, but the problem with tests is we can order tests that I call whack-a-mole. You know what whack-a-mole is? Have you ever played that as a game?
No, but I have I think it kind of self-explains itself.
Yeah, you whack one thing and something else comes up, and it has no meaning at all. And it has no meaning. And when we do tests and they don't have a purpose based on statistics, we'll find something that's abnormal, and it doesn't mean it corresponds to anything wrong in life. I mention that because you may just have high copper levels that may have nothing to do with your health. You just have high copper levels, and we don't know why. And you may be a variation of normal. On the other hand, now that you found the test, we have to do whack-a-mole to find out if it has any meaning. So the answer is you need a second opinion at a medical center that you go to, either a university medical center, Mayo Clinic, or somewhere else to discover whether this has any meaning at all, because you're not going to put it at rest. Now, your internist who did it scratched their head, looked at it and said, I don't know what this means, and I don't know if it has any meaning at all, but I'm not concerned. So you actually have an opinion from your doctor. The question is, why did they test it, and why is he continuing to test it? And if you're concerned, you need a second opinion. That's what you need. It's if you're not getting it through the water or through the cookware that you are, because we don't cook with copper, you know, for reasons because we don't want to have the toxicity of copper, because once again, in large amounts, it is toxic, then you got to find out where it's from. Now, you do have an option. One option is for 6 months or a year, you don't drink any water from your tap, and you just buy bottled water. And that's what you do. You consume that and check it out. And if you don't, if you're not cooking in copper and you're not getting it from your food because they don't put copper in food, and you're not getting it from the water because you're having bottled water, then you have it in your body from somewhere else in the past. And then the issue is, do we do anything about it? And if the answer is no, we often say, well, we'll monitor it. I never know what that means. We'll keep on watching it. So does that give you at least an idea of where to make us the next step?
Yes, I'll follow up with a second opinion.
You've got to get a second opinion because you have it there. But once again, the real question is, why did your doctor take the test in the first place? I have never ordered a copper level. So I want to question why they took the test in the first place, because we do too much testing in medicine and then search for things that have no medical meaning. And a little copper higher doesn't mean much. A really big amount of copper does mean something.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thanks for calling.
You know, the issue is, once again, we test too much, and all of a sudden we look for things that actually have no meaning medically within it. And, you know, this is a good situation. Maybe it has meaning, maybe it doesn't have meaning, but if you do enough tests, you're going to find abnormalities, most of which do not have any correspondence to human health because they aren't necessarily related to a disease.
Have a question for Zorba? 800-462-7413, our number. Now, Zorba, time for the segment where a real-life doctor, that's you, squares off against the mighty, mighty Internet. We call it Google Doc. Okay, Zorba. This time, we're going to hear from the original Google. Heck, let's call it the OG. It was invented long before the Internet existed. I'm talking about the dictionary.
Oh, the Ben Johnson. That was Ben Johnson who actually invented the dictionary.
I didn't know that.
Ben Johnson, back in England, said, you know, we've got to take this language and begin to actually put it in there, and he invented the dictionary.
He's a font of knowledge. The following email came to us from a listener named Carol in Springfield, Missouri. She's referring to a recent show where you were asking about the origin of the term bedside manner. Carol writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, Merriam-Webster's dictionary claims bedside manner was first used in print in the late 1840s. Mm-hmm. As you know, during the 19th century, doctors made house calls caring for patients who were seriously ill, giving birth, or dying in their own beds. Therefore, the term bedside manner, I assume.
I think they're exactly right. But, you know, we don't make house calls these days. People still die in their beds at home, but we don't make house calls. It's a rare event. And back in the day when they made house calls, they didn't have the lab tests that we have today.
I'm sure. Have a tip for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Let's get back to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. We welcome a listener now in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, a week or maybe 2 weeks ago, you and Zorba, Dr. Zorba, were talking to a woman about a donut, and it's not the kind of donut that you eat. And I think it had to do with Medicare. And I
it was the donut hole, which is the Medicare between it's Medicare Part D, and it's called the donut hole, which all of a sudden you have an increase in the price of drugs until you pay a certain amount, and then all of a sudden it's covered again. I never quite understand it.
Oh, good, because I didn't either.
No, well, what happens is you have Medicare Part D, and you've got a supplement. And then you've got a copay on your drugs. And after you spend a certain amount, that benefit disappears. Why? I have no idea. And then when you spend a lot of money and you get through, a second benefit pops in, which says you can't spend more than this amount of money, and we're going to cover the drugs again. And it's called the donut hole, where you're covered at the beginning, and then you're covered if you have a lot of expensive drugs under a different provision within it. And it's a dumb, stupid thing that was put into law. And the reality is the politicians in Washington have not addressed that because, as you know, they often don't address things that need to be fixed, no matter which part of that political tribe you're on. But that's the donut hole. And for a lot of people, it's very expensive. And I don't know where it occurs. I don't know if it's specific to every insurance policy or just what you have and how much.
Okay, that was a question, too. Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing I've learned in my office. People ask me insurance questions, and you want to know what my answer is universally?
Tell me.
I don't know. And the reason is I can be wrong, and policies are all so different because we've got a mishmash. But that is the donut hole. Covered for a while, not covered where you have to spend money. So all of a sudden you may have a drug that may cost you $10 or $15 a month. Then all of a sudden it's $300 a month. And here it is, you're on maybe a fixed income, and all of a sudden you don't have the money. And that's where a lot of senior citizens all of a sudden start cutting back on their insulin, cutting back on medications, trying to get their blood thinners, the novel, they're called NOACs, blood thinners for atrial fibrillation. They're trying to make it last a little bit longer, and it's really awful because people are then dying because they're trying to stretch out their drugs because they're in this donut hole, and Congress ought to fix it. Should do something about it, but they haven't yet. Write them a letter. Let's see if that makes a difference.
I will certainly try. Hey, thanks for your clarification about the donut hole.
You're welcome.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. I'm glad she called with that question, because when I think of donut hole,
right,
that's different than the donut you eat, I think of something you sit on.
Yeah, no, actually, that's what it was. When she said donut, I was thinking, what we get people for hemorrhoids? They sit on a donut so that their hemorrhoids don't bother them. But she kind of brings up an important point. I know with the donut hole, because I deal with patients all the time, and I didn't even think about the fact that if you don't have insurance or you never get to that point, you don't know what that is. You've got to be on a certain amount of medication. It's people who are in lots of medicines that need it that fall into this morass, this abyss of the donut hole. And one day they might fix it, but don't hold your breath.
Before we head out today, Zorba, we love it when our listeners offer up some helpful information or interesting ideas. The following laundry tip came to us from a listener named Margaret, who heard a show where we were discussing dryer sheets. Margaret writes, Dr. Zorba, dryer sheets are substitutes for liquid fabric softener. Fabric softener coats fibers to help them slide past each other so they break less as the fabric flexes. This is particularly important with knits, hosiery, sweaters, and anything with Lycra in it. It works by letting the scale on the outside of the fiber lie flat.
I got to tell you something. This is more information. TMI. Go ahead. You know, Lycra. Who knows? I mean, I never think of when do you ever read your fabrics?
There's more to come. Fabric softener should not be used on towels because it makes the fibers hydrophobic and therefore the towels are less absorbent.
Oh, you know something? When we do laundry at home, we put in fabric softener in all of it. Maybe we should stop doing it in the towels. Huh. Go ahead.
Do you think Zorba's a little close-minded? Send us your listener tips by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. But you know what? I've got a better answer. I think all of us need a laundress to come into the house and do our laundry or a laundry service. Then they'll do it the right way. Maybe this listener can come to my house and do my laundry. I would love that.
Thank goodness the show is over. If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org. And if you're listening and you happen to be a fabric softener and company and you want to sponsor us, please call us.
And you can find us at ZorbaPastor.org or Facebook. And don't forget... You can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please
do check. Or a laundry diagnosis.
Please do check with your doc or dry cleaner. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrin for Zorba Pastor. I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll be with us.
And have clean clothes.
On the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.